Blog Talk Radio. I'm Cindy Sansone Braff, author of Grant Me a Higher Loft, How to Go from the Relationship from Hell to One That's Heaven Sent by Scaling the Ladder of Love. That's a big title. It's a big book. Love's a big topic. The music you heard at the beginning of the show is called Eagerly Please, composed with love by my nephew Miles DeBastian. Thank you for joining us today. I am a woman on a mission, and that mission is to have you and everyone else have the best love life possible in this new millennium. But before this can happen, you're going to have to learn a few new tricks. Joining me tonight are my co-hosts, Kim and Nicole. Nicole is a beautiful young woman, a writer, and a lesbian, not necessarily in that order, and she's here to share her love stories and war stories with us. She's the voice that will make all of us women stop blaming everything on the opposite sex. Since Nicole knows women are making many of the same kinds of mistakes in their relationships with each other. Kim is a beautiful woman as well. She's a divorced mother of two. She will share the secrets that she has heard men utter about love, relationships, and marriage that she learned from being a dancer in a gentleman's club. And please, this is a call-in show, and we need your help. So call in. The number is 646-929-0958. Our radio show today is posing the question, are you reliving your parents' marriage? Somewhere along the line, we all have to do that. This is good news if your parents had a good marriage, and even the village idiot can figure out why you would want to do this. Why in the world do we want to relive our parents' crazy marriage? That seems like an insane thing to do. We do this because as children we are very judgmental. We witnessed our parents' battles and indiscretions, and we thought things like, if I were married, I'd never talk to my husband like that. Or if I were married, I'd never be a drunk or cheat on my spouse or whatever. So God remembers these thoughts and later on says, okay, little wise guy, let's see you do better. The problem is that we don't usually do better, we do even worse. Once we found ourselves cheating on our mates, being an alcoholic, or screaming at our spouses, we become the monster we thought we never would. God says, can you forgive your parents for being all too human? And that's what it's all about, forgiveness. Now, I know for a fact that I pretty much relived my parents' marriage somewhere along the line. I'm going to throw this question out to Nicole. Nicole, you haven't been married, but in any of your relationships, have you done this?
Yes, I have.
How would you classify your parents' marriage? Was it happy? Was it a sitcom marriage where sometimes they loved each other, sometimes they hated? Was it a cellmate?
It was definitely a cellmate relationship. My mother's been married 3 times. And they always say that the marriage that you witness before the age of 5 is the marriage that you tend to repeat. So in that particular case, my mother came from a very abusive marriage, you know, and for the most part, she was a single mom, you know, just trying to make ends meet after my dad, you know, was up and out. And but prior to my dad leaving the way that he did, he was extremely abusive. He was an incredible drug addict. He was an incredible alcoholic. And in my relationships, I think that the way that I guess I repeated those behaviors is because I tended to pick people that had some sort of alcohol or drug dependency.
You were playing rescuer? Were you trying to sort of say, yo, mom, if I was married to that man, I would have been able to rescue him?
I guess so. On some level, I guess I was, because my mother could not rescue my dad. And because I couldn't rescue my mom from the heartache that she felt during that period of her life, and because, it, you know, much later what I had succumbed to was that, you know, I felt responsible for her unhappiness, because had I not been, then maybe her marriage would not have been so bad. But I wanted to rescue, and, you know, even to this day, I have to catch myself, because I still like to rescue people, and sometimes it's just not my job.
And how many times have I told you that rescuing is part of that dysfunctional behavior triangle called rescuer, persecutor, victim? We always know when we're doing that triangle, because when we rescue someone, pretty soon we're the victim of that person. If we're trying to rescue a drug addict, it's not long before he's stealing money from us, bringing us down to the financial ruin, making our life a mess. And we become that person's victim, and then we're screaming at that person saying, why did you do this to my life? So be aware of that dysfunctional triangle. And the rescuing is something that we all want to do, but it's not very healthy. Now I'm going to throw the question out to Kim. You were married 2 times. In either of your marriages, were you reliving what you saw? And try to explain your parents' marriage a little bit to us. You can be kind to them, please.
Well, my parents were divorced probably when I was like 5 years old. But, it wasn't a very healthy relationship back in the 70s, even though I wasn't born yet. there was a lot of drugs involved and drinking, and it was kind of a loose lifestyle back then, but it was kind of scary and a little violent and, you know, a lot of craziness. And I would have to say in my first marriage, I probably duplicated that very, very accurately. It was a very bad marriage, and it was very short-lived, thank God, and I learned a lot from it. A lot of what I didn't want in a marriage. And I would have to say that my second marriage was nothing really like my parents' marriage, and that was good.
So you see, she did have to relive what she saw before the age of 5. And sometimes we're duplicating not only their marriage, but the behaviors we saw. If we were raised by an alcoholic parent, we probably say as children, God, I'd never do that. I would never be drunk. I would never do any of that. But we often do find ourselves doing that. I don't know if that was the case with you, either of you, because I know, Nicole, you were saying your father was a rabid drug addict. Did you find yourself ever duplicating that pattern of behavior?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I most certainly had my share of experiences where that's concerned, and at some point in my life, I just decided that I was either going to be like him or not like him, and after seeing the damage that he had done to my family, I just said I went in the exact opposite direction.
Okay, but have you forgiven your father?
Actually, after about 22 years of estrangement from him, my sister, who his daughter, had actually contacted me, and I learned that I had 4 additional brothers and sisters that I had no knowledge of, and I wound up meeting with them. I wasn't ready to face my father yet. But I wound up meeting with them, and eventually, yes, I did forgive my father, and I just had to let it go. I had to let go of the pain. I had to let go of the anger and the abandonment issues and everything else. And to this day, we actually have a pretty good relationship, and I'm extremely close with that side of my family now. It's just something that I never thought would be possible.
That's wonderful. And is your father a drug addict still, or has he?
My father minds his P's and Q's. I know that he still drinks. I'm not so sure about the drugs, but as far as drinking goes, yes, he does still drink, but he definitely drinks with less frequency, so I guess we have to be happy for small favors.
Oh, that's wonderful news. Now, I don't know about Kim, but Kim, in your marriage, did you see any of those patterns duplicating, that there was the violence and the alcohol in that
Yes.
first marriage? You
Yes.
had your rage issues, am I right?
Oh, absolutely. It was just the worst being brought out in both of us. And, nothing's really on a conscious level when you get into a relationship, you know, but I kind of knew it was over, the first week.
Well, Kim, didn't you know it was over when you were standing in front of each other?
Yeah, I kind of watch the movie every now and again, and I look at my face and I laugh because I changed my mind right then and there, but, I guess I was too embarrassed to walk.
Well, you were already dressed. Why not?
Yeah, I was wearing a nice dress. But I would have to say he was a lot like somebody that I just ordinarily wouldn't really ever get involved with.
Okay,
but Yes, we both, you know, at a certain point, you know, we both started drinking very heavily, and it became almost like a carbon copy of what my parents were, you know, the drugs, the drinking, and, you know, the control issues, and, you know, just absolute craziness, just psychotic bull.
Well, again, cellmates, that's what you were, probably second-rung cellmates. Those of you who read the book know it's not quite as violent as the first rung. It didn't necessarily end in a courtroom, jail, or a morgue.
Oh, well, there was jail time and the courtroom time.
So, okay, being a little kind. Okay, so we went to the first rung. And what characterizes first-rung love affairs is a lot of violence and rage issues. When we've been raised around violence and craziness, we do have our own rage issues. As a child, we keep it a lot under check. But when we do need to get this out, we do need to get that rage out. And, you know, the problem with this is sometimes, you know, you rage for a certain amount of time, a week, a month, a year, 10 years. You get tired of doing it, and the other person might still want to do it. And that's where, you know, they don't want to heal. So how did you finally work your way out of such a violent marriage?
Oh, jeez. Well, I went to rehab and I got my life together, and I was pretty much telling him that I just don't want to be with him anymore. It's not the person that I was meant to be with. And I walked away, and it wasn't a good parting, unfortunately, but I did walk away and begged him for a divorce. Actually, I begged his mother for a divorce. And she thought that was a good idea. You know, considering the 3 years of hell we were both putting each other through, so I finally just said, I don't love you, you don't love me. What the hell are we doing? I haven't even seen you in 6 months. So, you know, he finally agreed to that. So I think I had to pay him off too. So
now, if any of our listeners out there had happily married parents, we'd like to hear if you're duplicating that marriage. That would be wonderful to hear. The number is 645-929-0958. Now, I was talking to one of my clients the other day, and she is an interesting woman, very intelligent, beautiful young woman, and she had parents that had a very good marriage. They were very trusting of each other. The father never cheated. The mother never cheated. And she went in with her idea of marriage being two people are loyal and trustworthy to each other. And he came from a marriage in which there was a lot of lies and cheating. And he really thought marriage meant, you know, as long as you don't get caught, it's okay. And women are really stupid, and they're not going to figure out. And, you know, for years it went on, she wasn't aware of this going on. And when she did discover it, she was quite shocked. And that's the problem with marriage. We're not only duplicating our parents' marriage, but our spouse has to duplicate his or hers. So it gets a little bit more complicated if your idea of marriage is different from your spouse's idea of marriage. And, you know, we all do have to go into this relationship with our eyes wide open. Now, have any of you, say, Kim, did you ever have a happy relationship, one that began and ended on a happy note?
Sure, absolutely, with a very nice gentleman, and he's kind of my mentor. We had a considerable age difference, 22 years, and, you know, I wanted to get married and have children, and he didn't. And we kind of had to agree that we had to go our separate ways.
And that proves that not all relationships have to last forever.
You know, he was a little unhappy, of course, because I'm that much fun. But, you know, every now and again we see each other, and it's a high and by. It's a little awkward, but I learned a lot from him, and he learned a lot from me, and I was pretty happy for the relationship because I needed it at that time, actually.
And when was that? Was it before your first marriage? Or after?
It was before my first marriage. Yeah.
Okay, so isn't it funny? I have the same a similar scenario of being young, being with someone between the age of 15 and 18, and he ended up going to Vietnam when I was 18. And we had a really loving relationship. He was very kind to me. We never spoke harsh words to each other. We really did have a very good relationship. It ended after he came back from Vietnam. I couldn't deal with a lot of the issues that he had, and you know, that's unfortunate. I'm not happy about that myself. But then when I got married, I seemed to fall into the pattern of just because it's a marriage, reliving my parents' marriage, which was less than happy at times. And we do know as young children instinctively what a good relationship is. Somewhere, if we're blessed, we do that, but we don't seem to marry that person. We go for the one that's going to go after our jugular, if that's what we're used to seeing. And that's what this show is about, trying to figure out why we're duplicating patterns. Mainly it is that judgmental aspect of ourselves. Now, it is a call-in show. We would like to have some call-ins, 645-929-0958. We're trying to figure out if anyone else has made some of the same mistakes we've made and how we can learn from these mistakes. Now, I'm going to ask Nicole, in her relationships now, do you think you've gotten it out of your system? Would you have to duplicate patterns you saw, or have you learned enough?
I think that I have learned enough. I think that for the most part, it took me a long time, and it took me a lot of different relationships and trying different people on, but yeah, I think I got it out of my system now. I'm done being the rescuer. I'm done with the triangle.
Good. Well, if you get nothing out of listening to this show, you know, we have to stop judging others, or the universe has no choice but to put us in circumstances that will force us to do many of the same things we've judged. We have a caller?
Yes, Cindy, we do. Hello, you're on with Cindy, Kim, and Nicole.
Hello, girls. Good night.
Hi, Carrie.
Oh, Carrie, what would we do without Carrie? How are you, sweetie? Did you talk to your husband after last week's show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Carrie, and what happened out of that conversation, sweetheart?
Yes, so I had a kind of, unfortunately, we ended up very, very disagreed and disappointed. So he told me that he will act like he not listening over there. So he don't want to listen.
Okay. So I don't know what your parents' marriage. We're talking about reliving our parents' marriage. Do you feel that you're doing that with this marriage at all that you're having?
Yeah, actually, it's very funny because I know I'm the one. It's my fault, and I know what is the problem that I'm acting like my dad. I talk like my dad, and it's making me sick.
Right, because did you say as a child you would never do the things your father did?
When I was a child, my father always, he was very rude to us as kids, very violent with my mom, and I'm acting like that, you know, with my husband.
And you know it's because you need to start forgiving your father and start realizing life's a lot harder than we thought it was. Relationships are a lot harder than we think they are. And now that you're aware that you're becoming him, it's not that easy to change our behavior, but we have to watch our words. Are you trying to watch the way you're speaking to your husband a little bit?
I tried, and when I just opened my mouth, all the words come up, and I said, oops.
Well, that's good. You can say, you know, that's not really what I meant to say. What I meant to say was this, and apologize and start over again. It really is just starting over again, realizing I did it again. I put my foot in my mouth. I'm my father again. I haven't been able to control my temper, watch my words. And, you know, you saw your father treat your mother with disrespect. And it's sort of what you learned. In married couples, people don't treat each other with respect. And it's something that you're going to have to unlearn. But you can't do it by yourself. Is your husband willing to work with you on that? As you watch your words, will he speak to you kinder? Do you think it could work that way?
Oh, no. He works with me. And he told me, Ego, again, you see what you're talking about? You see how you're talking to me? And it makes me more angry in that moment.
Well, again, it's not judging so much. And when he says, you see how you're talking, it puts you on the defensive. You two seem to be attacking and going on the defense. It may be something that you're going to have to say, I didn't mean to say it that way, and I'm trying to say it better. You know, the two of you seem to be having some anger issues. He has some anger issues. You have some anger issues. And you're using the marriage as sort of a boxing ring. You know, and every day you sort of get in the ring with each other and duke it out.
Yeah.
And the pattern has to be stopped by being aware of it. Are you realizing, when did you become more aware of the pattern that you had?
Oh, my other two relationships before that, and I just cannot control it. I can't. I don't know how I can control this.
Have you tried anger management course?
Yep.
It didn't work, huh?
No, and that's why I stopped talking to my dad, too, because he usually lied to my mom. He usually cheated to my mom. He make me sick every time I was talking to him and makes me get into the bad mood with my relationships. So I haven't talked to my dad for, like, 2 years.
Okay, the issue is that until you forgive your father, you're going to become him. I'm not saying that you have to talk to this man, especially if he's abusive, but I think it's time you realized that your father's not a monster. He's a human being who's learned some pretty lousy ways of interacting, but he's a human being. And, you know, unfortunately, when we're children, we look up at our parents like they're gods, like they're not human, like they should know the right way to behave. And it is really your own inner guides trying to tell you, Harry, you've become your father, forgive him, and then you can start learning how to behave in a better way.
Yeah, he turned himself into monsters, and then little monsters. My brother, I don't talk to my brother neither. He's acting like my dad with my mom. And I'm realizing that I have that kind of problem, and I'm like my dad, and I just cannot do anything about it, you know.
Yeah, you know you can. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
31.
Okay, you're young still. What happened was I found that, you know, my father was a very violent man, prone to temper, and, you know, he'd do one thing wrong, and if he was in a bad mood, boy, you were sorry. And I found that I had a very quick temper when I was younger, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it about myself. I actually came to a place of great self-hatred, and I realized that it's almost instantaneous. This kind of, like, impulse response happens before we think. So I had to sort of step back, and when I would feel the anger, sort of grit my teeth and just breathe deeply for a second, and I would find it would pass, and that I wouldn't allow myself to speak the kind of words that wanted to come out of my mouth. I stopped myself, learned to go for a car ride, learned to go for a walk, and come back when I was calmer. And if you can ask your husband, if you can say to him, I want to be a better person, but I need you to help me. I need you not to push my buttons. I need you not to make me feel that, you know, if I do something wrong, say something wrong, you're going to attack me. I need you to work with me because I want this marriage to work and I want it to be better. You can't do this alone. You do need his help. If he's going to push all your anger buttons, you two are just going to stay cellmates duking it out. If you two can commit to the marriage and say, you know, tell your husband, I love you and I want to be a better wife. And I need your help.
Yeah, because I was working when I was working on my mom. I was not talking to my mom because I always blame on her. The style of life that my dad gave us was her fault, you know, because she could have walked away of the relationship when we was the kids.
Did she have the money to do that?
I don't know that I don't remember my mom.
She probably didn't. In the history of womankind, they didn't have the money to walk away from abusive men. That's why God wants women to work, make a living, so they don't have to run a prostitute archetype in which they stay with a man for money. They stay with him for love. I think the bigger issue is not so much your father, because now that you've become your father, you can forgive him. I think you need to forgive your mother for not walking away, because what you're doing is trying to drive your husband away. He's going to walk away. He's not your mother. But, you know, forgive your mother for the fact that maybe she wasn't strong enough to walk away.
Yeah, I couldn't understand that now. A year ago, they separated. My dad and my mom separated after 43 years marriage. And they're not together anymore. So,
are you angry at them about separation?
No, not at all. I'm happy for my mom. And I don't know about what I feel for my dad. I don't know. I don't care.
But again, it will be, you know, if you and your husband keep doing what you're doing, you're going to walk away from each other maybe 2 years from now, 4 years, or 42 years from now. It's just a question of time. And so, you know, trying to deal with your rage and your anger issues is an important thing, especially that you don't have children yet. You know, because you don't want to duplicate the pattern of you and your husband speaking disrespectful in front of each other in an abusive relationship. I mean, it seems like your husband from the last show that he would be willing to work at the marriage, but both of you are going to have to, you know, lay down your arms, stop fighting, and start saying, ah, we need to help each other. Because you sound like a wonderful woman with a lot of love in your heart.
Thank you. I have a stepdaughter, 10 years old, and she's being noticed that we're always fighting all the time.
And are you proud of what you're showing her?
No.
And she's going to duplicate this relationship in her relationship, and that's the sad part about it. If we don't stop it, it'll just go on and on and on and on.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you love your stepdaughter?
Yes, I do.
And, you know, this is something that the two of you can work on, showing her a better relationship. I think, you know, you and your husband are trying to talk, but, you know, you just have so many anger issues from the past. Maybe you can start from this day forward.
Yes, I will try to not get my blood going to my face and just speak up. You know.
I'm admitting that you have a problem. I think that's wonderful. What do you say, Kim?
I think that's great, and I also think every day is a new day. Nobody's perfect, Carrie. Everybody has their issues, and you have become aware of them, and that's pretty much the first step of making things better.
Yeah,
it is.
I think that it would make me feel bad that I realize that I'm a bad person and I'm not.
No, you're not a bad person. You're just a person who's learned some bad tricks. You're a good person who's learned bad tricks. There's a big difference.
Well, like you said, I'm gonna realize and I'm gonna recognize in front of my husband that I did wrong, you know, because this is my problem. I don't recognize that I talk bad, you know.
Well, you can't go back and change the past. You can only start from today forward. So focusing on all the behaviors from the past isn't gonna really help you too much. If you're aware of it, you can change it for tomorrow.
And for today. And what you're going to do is, if you see yourself saying those things, you're going to just stop in mid-sentence. If you hear you saying, why did you do this? And you start screaming, you stop yourself in mid-sentence and you rephrase it. You say, I wish you had emptied the garbage, instead of, why did you empty the garbage, or whatever it is. It's just a way of rephrasing it. And it does take time. It's training. It's definitely a training that we go through. But the more you do it and you watch the way you speak to everyone, it's funny how people think it's okay to speak to their mates in abusive tones that they never talk to anybody with. And that we learned that in our own homes. That's where I learned it. How about you?
Yep. I completely learned it there.
Right. And I mean, I'm not proud of what my daughter saw a lot when she was growing up. There were times when her father and I spoke to each other really not very nice. We're now divorced and we try always to be very kind to each other. And I think that's made some difference, but children do sense and know when we're behaving like maniacs. I mean, and that's what we have to all work to be a little bit better. And I know that you will. I can feel that you're committing to your marriage a little bit. Are you starting to feel that you want this marriage to work?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm trying to feel that, and I'm not trying. I'm starting, you know. And I do really. This marriage work. I don't want to get into the middle of divorce or start again. You know, I'm not blaming somebody, but I'm blaming, like Nicole said at the beginning, I have to stop and recognize that it was what is my fault, what I've been doing. No,
right.
Telling to somebody else it's your fault. It's somebody else's fault. It's recognize that it's my fault.
Right, and we're only responsible for our behavior. How many times do I tell all of you that?
Yeah.
All the time.
I mean, I
and
can't.
And Carrie,
oh,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Nicole.
Carrie, you also have to remember that the way that you talk to people, okay, it's like you have a bad habit. You know, this is what you learned growing up. This is what you saw. This is what, you know, got, you know, pushed into your brain. And all it is a bad habit. And just like there are people out there that stop doing drugs and there are people out there that stop smoking cigarettes, you can learn and you can stop reacting and talking the way that you do little by little. Nothing is permanent, okay? There's always the ability to change. And if you want to make that change, then you can make that change. You just have to believe in yourself and tell yourself every day that you're a strong woman, that you're a powerful woman, and that you could accomplish anything that you want to accomplish in this world.
That was very good advice.
Thank you, very good.
Well, thank you.
Have a good night,
and
all right?
Go and start tonight. Tell your husband, you know, today's a new day for us. Choose your marriage today and watch your words. And if you see him deliberately provoking you, you need to say, you know, I'm trying my best. And you know when you say that to me, it makes me crazy.
Okay.
So, again, good luck with you. And we really appreciate that you're calling in, because everyone seems to be afraid to share with us. And I don't know why, because I don't think we're too scary, are we?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm pretty scary. I'm not feeling too well today. I might be a little scary. I don't know.
I think they're scared to be honest.
Yeah, I think
you know what?
Honest.
I think Carrie's right on that.
They're scared to be honest. I know. It's hard to share. But the call-in number is 645-929-0958.
Thank you, Carrie.
Carrie,
thank you very much. And you keep smiling, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
And we're all talking about reliving our parents' marriage. And what we're really trying to do is get marriage to be something different than what we saw growing up. A lot of us did see dysfunctional marriages. I remember being a little kid, you know, it was growing up in the 50s in the shadow of World War II, and half the fathers were alcoholics and shell-shocked. I had no idea what had happened. And all I saw was really bad marriages surrounding me. And there was one couple across the street. We used to call them Aunt Fran and Uncle Matty. They had no children at the time. And I gravitated to that household because their marriage was so nice. They were two people that treated each other like equals, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. And later on, she would adopt children, and she would be, you know, she would be upset. Her house was a wreck. She didn't understand that she was at a clean house, and I'd say, but now you got kids. Isn't that better? And so I think what I really always wanted was Aunt Fran and Uncle Maddie's marriage, and that was something that I saw. Did you ever see a good marriage surrounding you?
I can honestly say no, I the people that lived across the street from us, they appeared to have a very good marriage. You know, they were very loving, very, you know, affectionate towards each other, and I found out they were swingers years later. So I don't know if that was good or bad, or, you know, I was a little kid looking in. It looked good to me compared to what I was growing up with. So.
Okay, we do have another caller.
Hello.
Hello. Man. Who is this man?
Guess who this is.
Is it Frank?
No, it certainly isn't Barry White, although I sound like him today.
Who is this?
It's Michael, just slightly
Michael.
Sick.
Oh, you touched your voice.
Yeah,
Michael,
my voice is much, much deeper because I'm just getting over my vacation.
Oh, well, Michael, we're glad you're here because everybody was hoping you'd call and share with us like what we learned from our dysfunctional families.
Well, the first thing that I learned from my dysfunctional family is that if you want people to call into a radio show, you have to give them the correct phone number.
Are we giving them the correct number?
you're giving out 645-929-0958, and I just sent you an
email.
Thank
you, Michael.
I tried to do it discreetly, so...
Okay,
wow.
Give me an email.
The host of the show has gotten the number wrong. We do apologize.
Okay.
You know, between this and our technical difficulties in the beginning of the show, I don't know what's going on tonight.
646-929-0958, and forgive my dyslexia tonight.
Don't worry about it.
Mercury in retrograde grade. Does anybody know?
No, that's because I wrote it by hand and can't read my own writing. Okay.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Okay. So
you know, the show, I mean, it's great. You guys have some really great information, and it's completely enlightening and enriching, and it's rendering me speechless.
So tell me about did you see a nice marriage growing up?
To be honest with you, my parents got divorced about the night before I started high school, and you know, it was certainly a very rough childhood from a psychological standpoint. My father was very physically abusive, and you know, when I moved back in with my mom for a few months when I moved to Florida, and my father just happened to find some way of weaseling his way into the house, I started realizing where I got all of my emotional eating kind of tendencies and habits from, and it was from my dad. And I started to kind of think back to a lot more of my own experiences growing up and how, I mean, he would mark his territory in the refrigerator. I mean, it was amazing. Like, you would see, like a huge piece of, like a huge like one of those Entenmann's cakes with the really thick chocolate icing on it. And
wait, so love
like,
those. That's how I gained my first 40 pounds.
Yeah, well, you know, he would leave his fork in there to make it everyone know that that was, like, his thing. And, you know, he'd always, like, hoard and gorge all the food. And watching him eat was like watching, I swear, it was like watching a dog eat for the first time in a week. And I started kind of taking an evaluation of this over the past year, and I realized that, you know, I developed my relationship with food because of him. Because he taught me that food was like the, that's what your whole, that's what established and determined your dominance was, how much food you had and how fast you could eat it.
And see, Michael is a nutrition coach, and he's really trying to get to the root of your food addictions and things that, via the dysfunctional marriage that you saw.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess really, you know, coming from an Italian household, the dysfunctional marriage really did have its origins at the dinner table. You know, like there were a lot of, like, physically violent things that happened at the dinner table. And my first memory is of my mother flipping over the dinner table and me crying over my food because my mother and my father got into an argument.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Dinner time was not my favorite time in my household either. You know, my Italian father, if somebody didn't like what was for dinner, you had better spit in a napkin and not make any big deal over it, because then the fighting would start.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the good news here is that I've turned into a hell of a cook, and I've learned how to enjoy food pretty much on my own.
Michael, do you buy the groceries?
Do I buy the groceries? Listen, I do everything.
Is that the same as buying dinner, though? I don't know.
That if, unless my cat is going to start taking out the trash, you know. Yeah, I buy the groceries. In fact, I went and I bought the groceries, and I walk to the store, and I buy my own groceries. And I pick out the vegetables, and I wash the dishes.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is a new millennial.
Okay, so for the single ladies out there, please contact Cindy.
Yes.
No, honestly, I can't be bothered with it. Unless they're cat lovers, I want no part of it.
Okay.
Well, you know, you can't trust people to go like that.
Okay, I mean, Michael, I hear some hostility about relationships. Is it possible your parents' dysfunctional marriage made you really leery of getting into
it? I don't think it was my parents' dysfunctional marriage that made me leery of relationships. I think it was my parents' dysfunctional marriage that made me really leery of food. I think it was my relationship with my sister that made me very leery of relationships, because she was the primary example for me growing up, and she's domineering, possessive, overly aggressive, bossy. And that was pretty much the types of, and also extremely condescending, in addition to being sugary, buttery, sweet 1 minute, and the next minute she's an absolute nutcase. So it's a very, very confusing relationship. So naturally, that's what I thought women were supposed to be, and I was necessarily supposed to be subservient to somebody who would basically tell me what to do, how much to do it, and how much money I should spend on it. And so that's essentially what I grew up thinking. And then all of a sudden, you know, I start meeting other people that weren't like that. And, you know, this behavior is not normal. But, like, would you just tell me what to do already? Because I'll do it. You know, don't ask me to make a decision about this relationship because I don't have a spine. So just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Do you think that in some indirect way that does root back to your parents? Because it's very obvious that your sister apparently took on the matriarchal role for you.
Yeah, I mean, because
my
mother was working a lot, and my sister was essentially the person who was raised. Yeah, I mean, obviously in a Freudian sense it goes back to my parents' marriage, but I relate it more to my sister, because if you look at the women that I went to therapy about, they're all pretty much carbon copies of my sister and her borderline personality problems. You know,
but
narcissistic.
She was the mother
and,
here when your mother was at work, though.
Well, because
so
my mother
sense,
is. Yeah.
In a sense, it is kind of like your mother, because that's who you kind of saw as your mom growing up when your mother was working, and you know,
yeah,
and that
yeah.
is as a direct result of the type of relationship that your parents had, because apparently both of your parents were out in the workplace, and neither
well,
of them aside from the refrigerator.
Well, definitely
you know,
not both
the refrigerator,
of my parents.
You know, guarding, and you know, neither of them, you know, assume their roles as parents when they came back in the house?
Well, I think trying to squeeze this down into a nutshell, I mean, it's a lot bigger and more broad than that, but I've essentially traced it back to my relationship with my sister because of the fact that, I mean, I'm repeating that relationship all the time, and the biggest problem with that was that the rest of my family tried to impose unhealthy interaction between me and my sister, and I just gave up years ago, and it wasn't until about 6 or 7 months ago where I decided, you know something, I'm not going to continue this. Because it's not doing anything but causing me to sink deeper and deeper into these bad habits, and I need a clean slate. So I just basically cut them off altogether until there was a time where we can actually have some communication where it could be kind of come out in the open where, like, look, this is a really, really unhealthy relationship, and I should not be forced to acknowledge it as being a healthy relationship. So, I mean, there's certainly so much more to the story than meets the eye, but I've traced back my issues with food that going back to my father and indirectly with my mother, and then also like my relationship issues I've traced back to my sister because she's essentially a narcissist, and you know I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm more drawn to blonde Polish girls, who is essentially my sister, than I am to brunette Italian women, which is essentially my mother. So from strictly like a Freudian or an Oedipal sense, you know, my sister is essentially the mold in which that I was kind of conditioned to be drawn to. Now I'm just like cleaning the slate, just starting off fresh and starting off from the beginning and trying to figure out what to do from there.
Well, it is a family dysfunction that we learn. I think if there's a lot of fighting between the parents, the children start fighting among themselves anyway, and there starts to be power issues.
I was an only child.
Completely.
I fought amongst myself all the time.
I didn't know you were an only child.
Well, I'm virtually an only child. I'm the only child out there that has as many brothers and sisters as I do.
Oh, that's true, because
you
know about those.
Well, I didn't know about four of them until I was, you know, into my 20s, and my mother had my youngest brother when I was 16, so I virtually had a sibling-less upbringing.
But, you know, I come from a family of six kids, and there was nothing but craziness all the time. There was always drama, and I would have to say that, you know, I was kind of like a mother figure in that sense, but I was very loving, you know, well, my brothers might not think that, but, you know,
his brother, 646-929-0958, this is your time to get even.
And even to this day, I mean, I hold a pretty tight relationship with each and every one of them, and they've always been grateful to me, although they didn't marry any women like me, nor did any of them look like me, but they actually married women like my mother, which was ironic, but coming from a family of six kids, it was nothing but craziness.
Well,
about food. We never had food in the house.
Well, I'd have to admit with Michael, though, because I had three older brothers, and they were pretty mean to me growing up. And actually, I realized in my marriage, I was fighting with my husband the way I fought with my brothers for the first year or so. So we do learn some pretty dysfunctional things from our siblings, that's for sure. We learn
isn't every family in America dysfunctional? I mean, isn't that really...
Well, we've been waiting for a couple to call in that's happily married with her happily married, you know, family, and we haven't heard any yet.
You know, I think that dysfunctionalism has been a word that's been thrown around a lot. There's all different levels of dysfunctionalism. What is normal? Who the hell knows what normal is? I certainly don't know. And nobody's perfect. And I think that our generation has more of an awareness, more so than our parents, because they didn't have a clue. They were too drugged up and drunk most of the time. But back in the 70s when I wasn't born. but, you know, there's so many different levels. You know, I have yet to meet a happily married couple. I mean, occasionally in the bar someone will come in and tell me how happily they're married. Then what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah, that's really, really encouraging. I'm totally sticking with my cat.
Well, actually, you know what, Michael?
So
don't think of it that way.
Wow.
Don't think of it that way, Michael, because you know what? And this is 100% completely honest, okay? Now, the model that I always followed was that of my mother.
okay? And hi, Mom, you're listening right now, and I'm sorry if you get insulted right now.
And I wish to call in and defend herself.
But, you know, I followed my mom's example, and I got a lot of bad habits from her first marriage. Her second marriage was that of the passive-aggressive, where there were issues, there were problems, there was negativity, and nobody talked about it. And when she left that marriage, I could honestly say, you know what, it must be true that three times a charm, because she did finally meet somebody, and they actually have a really nice relationship. They have, you know, thank God, yes, you know, I mean, so, you know, it's, sometimes it takes a couple of practice people in there, but, you know, eventually you find it.
It's like you're out there.
Well, I mean, can I ask you a question? Is it really that important?
Is what really that important? Having a functional relationship? Yes.
Yeah, having a relationship. I mean, my entire life, it's so funny, I've always done things by myself. I've always felt more comfortable by myself. And I only started dating and being really sociable because I thought it was something I was supposed to do. And the past, I guess, 10 years where I've been spending a lot of time by myself, and especially the past year, I started to realize that, you know, I really like this. This is really where I feel most comfortable, and I realized over the past couple of years that I was actually more introverted than I was extroverted, and I was just kind of pretending to be extroverted, pretending to want a relationship and a girlfriend. But really, the only thing I wanted to do was to do my own thing and to read and be around animals and, you know, kind of be a little bit kind of on the solo side. And I felt that this is something that my mother really influenced. She was always about the man that she left my father for. She was so wrapped up in that relationship, and that relationship was so important and everything. And even when I was a very, very young kid, I never played with any kids from school. I always spent a lot of time by myself. And it was when I got into high school that my mom was really, really, really pushing it on me that this is what it means to be happy, is that you need somebody. And I'm like, I don't need anybody, but I guess I'm supposed to do this, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. And now that, like, yeah, I got a new apartment, I'm living by myself, I got to be honest with you, I have absolutely no desire whatsoever for a relationship.
Okay.
And it is,
you know, we do
the most, the happiest thing in the world.
We do need to stand on our 2 feet before someone can come in, but I need to tell you that people have the illusion of being happy when they're by themselves. Like, I live alone now, too, and it's wonderful because
I think people have the illusion of being happy when they're with somebody.
You know, but you look, you know, you can pretend that you're all healed, because when we're in a great place of great love, great fear emerges and our unhealed issues will surface. As long as we're staying by ourselves, we don't have to deal with the fact that we have some dysfunctional patterns of behavior, that we don't know how to be intimate, that we don't know how to share, we don't know how to commit, that we're have our own issues that will never, ever be challenged if you stay alone. An intimate relationship is a healing modem, and that's why, you know, the book is called Grant Me a Higher Love. It's about when we're in love, fear emerges. So it is something that, you know, I'm very proud of you standing on your own 2 feet, but maybe there's someone you could let in who will give you the space to be alone, give you the space that you need, but also be there to give something to your life. I mean,
well, you know, that's great wishful thinking, but I honestly can't disagree with you more. I mean, this is the happiest I've ever been in my life since as long as I can remember. It was always when I had my own sort of, you know, invisible space.
Well, no, that's good. But again, you may be avoiding healing some issues by spending so much time alone and by not.
Well, again, I guess we'll agree to disagree on this, because honestly, the only time I've ever experienced happiness and self-acceptance is when I was alone. I mean, there are people in this world that never have a relationship, and, you know, they're priests, they're clerics, they're monks, they're all these
people. And we
all
know what they're doing behind the closed doors.
Everybody. I mean, you know, it's just.
I wouldn't use them as examples, really.
Well,
I mean,
to be perfectly honest with you, it's like, I really feel like my entire life I've had this kind of imposed on me. And it started out with my mother. So this is very relevant and on topic, Cindy, but to be honest with you, the more time I think about it, the more time I spend on it, and you and I have had discussions already about all of the work and research that I've done on this personally, from, you know, the things I've done even going back several years, and it always comes back down to, oh, finally I have my space and my time, and, you know, sometimes it's like the ultimate in peace, because I can do whatever I want and not have, anybody holding me back or any anchors or anything like that. Honestly, I went from somebody from the age of 14 up until the age of 27 being so determined to go and find that one person. And then one day I'm like, what am I doing? Is this my goal? Is this what I want? No, it's my mother's goal and what she wanted. But it was never something that I made the decision for myself. Now it's like self-expression, self-expression, self-expression. And
it might also be just something that because your mother wanted it for you might be so realizing it could still be what you want, but you're so angry at her for forcing it down your throat.
Honestly, there's no anger. There's no animosity there. There's just, you know, we all have to make decisions for what we want. And
true.
I think I finally made the decision that for myself, unless it's something where I choose it, I really don't want it, and it's not something that I really choose right now. And even when I go into a social atmosphere, I'm going and I'm kind of doing what I feel is expected of me instead of doing what I really want. It's pretty much, you know, kind of keeping to myself a little bit and observing, and I always feel like it's expected of me to go, and, oh, there's the best-looking girl in the crowd. I have to go and talk to her, otherwise people are going to look at me. You know, and there's somebody else I'm attracted to her, that's great, but I really don't feel like engaging in a conversation, and I almost never really do. And it's funny because my relationships are so much better when there's absolutely no chance of there being some sort of intimacy in it. And I feel like that the communication is better, the pressure is off. Again, it's relevant to the topic because it's something that I think I got from my mother, and it's a really liberating and freeing experience to say, hey, guys, I'm kind of androgynous here, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, again,
so,
it's always a choice, but I would keep in the back of your mind that sometimes spending a life alone is a way of avoiding healing some issues, because I could seem perfectly healed in every way, but sometimes you put a person into my life, and I realize, boy, I got some issues. Can anybody agree
with
that?
Well, maybe you're just mirroring them, you know? I mean, that's something that I've seen, too, is that, you know, sometimes you're just mirroring the other person and you're just reflecting what they're choosing not to see. And, you know, I think I'm a little sick and tired of doing that, and I'm a lot more
interested. Well, maybe you need to take some time, and being alone isn't always the worst thing, and I'm going to have to agree with you there.
I would take the next 10 years, you know.
When you least expect it, Michael, it'll hit you in the face and it'll bring you great joy, so.
Well, let's just hope that's not just wishful thinking.
Oh, be careful what you wish for.
And, Nicole, I wanted to ask Nicole, you're not in a relationship right now, are you?
No.
Okay. Are you enjoying your solohood now?
I am. I am definitely enjoying being by myself. Throughout my life, I've always wanted to be in a relationship. I've always desired the relationship, and I kind of settled for less in a lot of ways by always seeking something and just, you know, in a sense, I mean, taking whatever came along, you know. Now, sometimes I was meant to be with those people and sometimes I wasn't, but I went through a lot of transitional people. And this is the first time I could honestly say, after getting out of a relationship, I've pretty much spent the last year completely single for the first time in like 9 years, and I'm loving it. You know, I'm having casual, you know, contact with people. I'm dating people on a very casual level, and you know, I'm liking that. I'm liking, you know, seeing how different people fit, and I'm also more at ease with myself at this point in my life, where it's okay if I'm alone.
That's true. Now, I was hoping my daughter Shauna was going to join us tonight, and since she didn't,
I was really looking forward to hearing from her, too.
I know. She said she was going to give her input about, she definitely relived her parents' marriage, and I'll have to fill in since she's not here. She had a boyfriend, and, you know, their relationship is pretty dysfunctional, and I realized that I had shown her some pretty not-so-great tricks, and he was kind of a needy guy that, you know, she became like a mommy to him, and that was sort of what was happening in my marriage. Sometimes you become mommy to a child, and I saw her duplicating that pattern, and she did kind of see it for herself, and took her like several years to get herself out of this relationship, but she definitely got it out of her system, thank God. Now, I promised Nicole and Kim that I would love to hear and ask them if they would read something from the book, and it's the Ten Commandments of Soulmate Love, and this, if you listen, Michael, you might find that these are some things that we could all do in our relationships to make them all healthier and healed. So, Nicole, you're going to start with the first commandment?
Yes, I will. You shall turn your life over to God. if you're going through a rocky patch in your relationship, ask God to guide the two of you and watch miracles happen. Number two, you shall tell your beloved over and over, time and time again, I love you with my entire heart, soul, mind, and body. To truly love someone, you must love this person with your entire being, and you must be willing to say so. Number three, you shall stand on your own 2 feet and not expect your beloved to carry your cross. In other words, don't expect your soulmate to be your surrogate mommy or daddy. Number four, honor your soulmate and help encourage and support your beloved to become all he or she was meant to be. We're on this earth plane to grow, learn, and evolve. Encourage your soulmate to pay homage to the yin factor by answering his or her divine calling. Number five, you shall practice the art of sacred sexuality. Strive to learn the difference between having sex and making love. Number six, you shall love your soulmate unconditionally. Number seven, you shall not take advantage of your beloved's unconditional love. You're fully expected to heal your issues in the midst of such a divine showering of love. To do otherwise is sacrilege. Number eight, you shall be your true self. This one's easier said than done, I would say. Number nine, you shall tell the truth. Remember to temper your honesty with kindness. 10. You shall not take your beloved for granted. We hold this true to be self-evident.
Okay. Now, Michael, did you get anything out of that?
Yeah. I mean, the only way you could be your true self is if you're by yourself.
No. The only way you can be your true self. The only way you can be your true self is if you know your true self.
Bingo, that's why you spend so much time by yourself. You can go and get, you know,
well,
your primary relationship is with yourself. So
absolutely, absolutely.
And
you know, if you don't have a good relationship with yourself, nothing else matters.
Of course. And we're going to be having a little break from next week. We will not be having a show next week because I'll be doing a show at the Blue Firmament. I'll be doing a workshop, and it's single on Valentine's Day. So many reasons to celebrate. I'm sure.
Why don't you broadcast it live?
I would love to broadcast it live. I'd have to find somebody with a laptop, and we could.
Oh, if I was around there, I'd bring my laptop.
I know. We could certainly do that. And then on the 19th, February 19th, we had a great idea thrown around here from Kim. She'd like us to explore the topic of sacred sexuality, you know, the difference between making love and having sex. So that should
Look at this. Last week's infidel wants to talk about sex again.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm still calling into that show. I'd love to get.
Hey, I'm not having so much. I need to get it out of my system.
Talking about it helps. And that's, I know there's a lot of talking, not too much going on in the bedroom here. But we're going to really have, hopefully people will call in, and hopefully I'll remember that the real call-in number is 646-929-0958. But even when we
gave
the right number, only a few brave souls were calling in with us. But I hope with the topic that we're choosing the next time, more people will be brave to call in. We do appreciate Michael calling in. And I think you girls had some shout-outs for Valentine's Day.
Yes, I want to say happy Valentine's Day to all my friends and loved ones. I love you all. And also to my lovely gentleman friend who will be in Florida this week. Valentine's Day does have significance, and I'm sure the lady in your life does believe that. I guarantee you that. And I hope you find your balls in Florida. But, you know, I love you, and I hope you have a good time.
I just want to tell everybody that I love them, and happy Valentine's
Day. Wait, I'm in Florida.
Did you find your balls in Florida, Michael?
Well, you know what, Michael, if you find his balls, you can mail them to Kim. Yeah, thank you.
Well, I mean, the last time I checked, it came with a little baggie.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I mean, they might be. Now you gave me a complex. I don't know where
they are.
That didn't
take much, Michael.
Oh, my goodness. I'm freaking out. I'm getting, you know, I grew up in the 5 towns. I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood, and now it's coming out. Oh, my God. Where did I leave them? I left them somewhere, and I can't
That's
find them
the
now.
That's where the accent comes from. Okay.
Oh, no.
Which 5 towns? Woodmere?
I grew up in Woodmere, right on Peninsula
Woodmere.
Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
I was the only Italian Catholic within miles of
wow.
me. And so it was a very interesting, you know, that's life story part two.
Okay, we're just on our last 9 seconds. We want to say good night, and please join us and Godspeed in your journey toward a higher love. And thank you for joining us.
It was a very interesting.